Coming up next on Tech News Today, Google and Microsoft have dueling announcements regarding the classroom. Also, Samsung is supposedly hoarding all of the Qualcomm Snapdragon 835 processors. iOS 10.3 beta is starting to roll out. That brings Find My AirPods and developer replies in the App Store reviews section. Digging deep into the complex world of emoji, I promise, and computer. Any messages for me? All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for Twit's audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. And thanks for your continued support.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1690, recorded Tuesday, January 24th, 2017. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT. And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you fresh, high-quality ingredients to cook delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/TNT. Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about some of the biggest tech news stories that are bubbling up to the surface with people who are bubbling up to the surface and also happen to be passionate about technology. I'm Jason Howell. Megan Maroney, for the very last day of 3 days in a row, is not bubbling up to the surface here at the table. Yesterday, she was represented by a water bottle. And what do you know? I have another water bottle. So there we go. I'm sure Megan appreciates that. Joining me in her shoes is Ron Richards. How's it going, Ron?
Megan is a force to be reckoned with, but I'll do my best.
Okay, you got this. You're an old soul when it comes to this show at this point.
Oh, don't call me an old soul. I'm a welcomed friend. How's that?
both apply. Well, I you're not old, but your soul is awesome.
Okay. I'll take it.
All right. Let's talk about things that we know. It's weird. The last couple of days, I feel like I've been trying to like diversify tech news, but it's been really hard because there's been tons of Google and Android and related things. So there's a lot of kind of concentrated stuff. It's not all chosen because Ron Richards, who I also do All About Android with every week, is on the show. It's just the way the dice fell. So
hey, listen, sometimes Android is up, Apple is down. Sometimes yeah. Apple is up, Microsoft is down. You got to roll with it and be prepared. That's just true. Lucky it's about things that I know about that I can talk to you about versus yeah. things I don't know about.
So. Either way is fine by me, but we got a lot of fun stuff to talk about. So here we go. Google introduced a few new convertible Chromebooks from Asus and Acer that are designed with the classroom in mind. The Asus Chromebook C213 and the Acer Chromebook Spin 11. Both have pressure-sensitive stylus capabilities, USB-C for charging, and full Android app support. Also included, they say, is something I'd never heard of before, world-facing camera, which basically means a secondary camera that sits in the keyboard deck. That allows students to snap pictures when the convertible is in tablet mode. So normally, if you have this convertible laptop style, you put it in tablet mode, and that rear-facing camera is covered. Well, in this case, it's embedded into the keyboard deck, so you still kind of have that. So, you know, they can take pictures of butterflies and stuff.
Or the world.
Because
it's a world-facing camera.
That's right.
That is so marketing speaky.
It really is. Totally.
No, but these, I mean, one of my early predictions for 2017 is that the convertible notebooks are going to take off, and this is, you know, the evolution of the tablet, which I think we now can all agree is going by the wayside really as a product line, and the cross functionality of a tablet with a laptop is the way to go. And I think these are really cool, really interesting devices.
Yep. Teachers apparently have continually requested a single kind of like a hardened device for tablet, for laptop, with keyboard support. So, I mean, that kind of speaks to what you're talking about. This convertible form factor more and more is being used just because of the versatility, because of the functionality. And yeah, tablets seemed tablet seems like a feature as opposed to a sole purpose, you know, sole reason for being. Now it's all integrated together, so you have it when you need it and beyond.
Yeah, and I think that these are only going to be available for educational and commercial buyers, but I see this kind of device being, you know, kind of like, oh, I want one, you know, like, because it's kind of neat. I mean, I love we talked at length about our tablets and the adventures of Android tablets, and I love my Nexus 9, which is going to stop working one day. Mm-hmm. But honestly, the device I carry the most with me is a laptop, and you know, seeing like my nieces grow up and going to school and seeing how both adept they are at using iPads and other tablets as well as using laptops, like the next generation is ready for this kind of convertible device. And, you know, personally, as an Android guy, it's great to see them have the ability to start using Android apps, to be exposed to that ecosystem and be raised on it. And doing this will only help get more support for this kind of category line on the Android side with developers and software makers.
Yep. So you're going to get, they had a few other announcements kind of timed with this. Chrome OS is continuously being retooled for better touch support, which it has to be. These touch screens are integrated, stylus support, all that kind of stuff. So they're kind of making some of the touch points a little bit larger, so it can kind of cross that gap, be that perfect kind of in-between device between being a laptop and a touchscreen tablet, let's say. Also, all Chromebooks going forward from this day forth, let it be known, they will all be compatible with Android apps. Being developed, and actually a bunch of them previously are going to be brought up, have an update, and they're going to get compatibility with Android apps. And that just opens the app suite tremendously and brings Chrome OS further into being a viable computing platform on the same, you know, level, at least to some degree, as, you know, the competitors like Microsoft's Windows. Obviously, those other platforms are stronger in certain cases, but for many people, and especially in the schools, I mean, this is all you need while still being super secure. Google says 20 million teachers and students are using Chromebooks weekly in the classroom. 70 million G Suite for education users. I mean, they've got a stranglehold. Maybe that's the wrong word for it, but they really got schools in their vice grip. No, that's the wrong word for it. You know what I mean?
They've got schools on board. They've got them participating.
In a headlock. They're giving schools a noogie. Yeah.
Oh, geez. Wow. Google's just a bully. I think that, you know, the computers in education has been a priority since Steve Jobs determined that for Apple back in the day. If you remember this legacy of, we need to build devices that can be used in schools.
Yeah.
And it's great to see that torch being continued on. You know, it seems like that's a category that Apple has somewhat moved on from, is a nice way to say. And so it's really interesting to see, you know, kind of Google and other, you know, manufacturers picking up the slack.
Yeah, really benefiting from that. Adobe also, by the way, has a suite, has a new suite of Creative Cloud apps for Chromebooks. So even that, you know, that used to be the thing, like, well, you can't do Photoshop or whatever on a Chromebook because it's so underpowered. Now Adobe's even tackling that. So a lot of the main apps that you're used to using on a full blown computer are now being kind of cloudified for use on a Chromebook, which is nice to fill in the gaps.
Very cool.
Google's doing just fine, of course, in the classroom, as we were just discussing, but Microsoft wants a piece of that too. Microsoft announced the Intune for Education, which is basically a new device and cloud-based app management service. It's targeted at the classroom to facilitate things like device setup, configuration, management for teachers and businesses. Microsoft's also showcasing a lineup. I mean, their announcements are so similar. It's kind of crazy. A lineup of low-cost Windows 10 PCs for schools, including the HP Stream 11 Pro G3 for Education. Yes, that is the full name. For $189 and the HP ProBook X360 11 Education Edition. Catchy for $289. But, I mean, this is obvious. I mean, this is the same deal, right? Like, there's a lot of headway that can be made both in deploying large amounts of devices if you can get it into a classroom, and also creating brand affinity, right? A brand identity for students who learn either, you know, to do all of their work in the world of Office 360 or to do all their work in the world of Google's Cloud Suite. This is a great way to get to kids early and to teach them that your platform is better, I suppose.
Yeah, well, maybe HP can hire the guy who came up with world-facing camera to work on their product names, because it might be hard for kids to remember the names of their products when they're called the HP Stream 11 Pro G3 for Education. But that said, I think that Microsoft is unique in their ability to approach education and schools as an enterprise with all their experience as Windows for an enterprise. So if you really think about it, a school network and a school kind of infrastructure is an enterprise. It just happens to be not a commercial business facing enterprise. It's one that's focused around education. You know, so a lot of the lessons they can make by, you know, deploying, you know, installs across multiple machines quickly and all that IT wizardry stuff that people get certified for and things like that, applying those to the school is really smart. And, you know, again, it's continuing the support of education and giving them options. And you really got to wonder if the similarity in timing and type of announcements these are, you got to wonder which one heard about the other one first, and or is it truly just like circumstance and coincidence that this is both hitting at the same time?
I mean, there is at least some similarity because these were both announced at the same event. And I'm suddenly trying to look it up because I didn't write it down in my notes, but they're both at an education-based event.
Makes sense.
I'm not able to pull up the name of it right now. So they're there at this event making similar announcements. I mean, the announcements that they actually do make are very, very, very similar. I mean, it's basically the platform, laptops support it, you know, all have pen support. Same with obviously the Windows 10 laptops. There's also one from JPIK. Has a convertible laptop for emerging markets. So there's going to be a low-cost version of this. That includes a basic microscope and a thermal probe for science studies. So really That's doing very some cool. Very innovative and unique things. Intune for Education launches in spring. One-time fee of $30 per device. And there you go.
That's great. I mean, it's, you know, like that's, you know, competition is good and giving schools options. I mean, if I was running a IT department for a school, I'd really have to look at these and see what is the best for our organization. It's funny, though, because my sister is a teacher at a public school here in New York, and they recently switched over to Microsoft from they weren't on Google. I don't think they were on any real system, but all the teachers had to convert to Office 365. And there was this whole big migration, the cloud, you know, they're using all the different cloud services and things like that. And there, of course, there's a lot of grousing because, you know, everyone hates change and it's always difficult to do new things. But I want to circle back to her to find out how it's, you know, now they're a couple months in to see how it's working out, to see if the Microsoft is an improvement versus what they had previously.
Right, right. Apple began to seed the first beta for iOS 10.3, its next big platform update. Developers signed up for the beta program can look forward to some pretty interesting new features, some features that people have been asking for quite a while. First, find my AirPods, kind of like find my iPhone. But you know, those AirPods, they are kind of difficult to keep track of, apparently. At least that's what all, you know, people seem to say about them as a potential of getting lost very easily. Here, it tracks the last location that the wireless headphones were connected to the iPhone via Bluetooth, so users can go find them if they lose track of them. It's like once that signal's disconnected, it says the last time they were located was here. See if you can find them.
Does it say the last time they were located was here, and good luck?
Well, there's also a function to have them sound a noise. So you can actually, once you're within that area, you can send the signal and they'll start beeping or something so that you can find them. So that's useful.
I just got to wonder how many people are going to have them fall out of their ears while they're getting off the BART train. And then they go, it just goes off from there. And they never be found anyway.
And then they have to Benny Hill after it. Run after it. Users can also, I said they could trigger the sound for the AirPods to finding them to make that a little bit easier. But also, this is a big feature request. A lot of people had asked for this, allowing developers to reply to reviews publicly in the App Store and the Mac App Store. Now this, Ron, you know as well as I do, this feature has been on Android for quite a while now. Super useful, right? Because it gives the developer direct ability to address concerns, maybe criticisms that people might have. I'm giving them a 1-star because it didn't blah, blah, blah. The developer can follow up and say, well, actually, update to the next one. And when you do, hey, change your rating. It's a nice kind of communication method to keep everybody on the same page, have users feel like the developers are actually listening and understanding their concerns. So
yeah, and it's needed. And it's also it's a great tool for troubleshooting and debugging. Like if somebody gives their app a bad review because it didn't work, you know, we've seen a lot in the Google Play Store where the developers come in like, okay, well, what happened? Like, help us. Like, you know, like we want to make sure this works for everybody. And I think for the really engaged developers, that's a key form of customer service. And it's I'm surprised it took this long for Apple to. Well, not knowing how Apple works, I'm not surprised. But the fact that it's 2017 and this is finally happening 10 years later is great to see.
Yeah, yeah. There's also, I guess, an update that allows for in-app rating of apps. And again, I feel like I've seen this on Android a lot where you're using an app and suddenly the window comes up and it says, give us a rating. And I guess in iOS, I'm trying to remember, in Android, if you do that, it doesn't allow you to rate directly from there. It sends you right through to the Play Store to drop your rating. That's what it did in iOS before. Now with this new update, it gives you the ability to drop your rating in without leaving the app experience. So that's kind nice update.
That takes away some friction in that whole process. Yeah, because I hate being taken away from the app. So that's that's pretty cool.
But I will say in the grand Switch experience, I mean, very related, right? 76% of iOS users have iOS 10. 0.07% of Android users have Nougat, which is the latest version. Yes, they're different platforms. But when I'm considering the pluses and the minuses of everything in this crazy experience that I'm only 2 weeks into out of four, that's a big plus, right? Like, and mind you, this is a developer update. But when this goes out to most users are going to get it and they're going to get it right away. And that's a huge benefit to iOS.
Yeah, except when they release it and it bricks half the phones that install it. I mean, all my friends with iPhones say, oh, that's don't install the new iOS and to wait a little bit, you know. So there's pluses and minuses to that. And Apple has stumbled in that update process. They haven't been perfect all for the past 10 years totally. So there have been bumps.
For sure. Yeah. Samsung unleashed its fourth quarter earnings and the Note 7 wasn't enough to bring the company down as it posted record profits around $7.93 billion in line with its earlier guidance. Samsung says the company took a $5 billion hit thanks to the Note 7 recall, but it achieved all-time high earnings for its chip business. Those were up 77%. The chip gains are basically making up for any of the deficiencies in the smartphone side. And even actually, even in light of the Note 7 issue, mobile business still saw a 12% increase in profit for Q4. So Samsung, you know, we give them a lot of static for the Note 7 debacle, but obviously not hurting and where it counts.
Well, yeah, if anything, this just shows how big of a company Samsung actually is.
Yeah.
And that, and for us, we look at the phone business and judge them on that. But they've got they're a massive, massive company. I mean, we talked about how on our previous shows, we talked about how I think it was on Alabama Android. We talked about how they represent like a third of South Korea's GDP. Mm-hmm. Like it's something like enormous. And you got to wonder if they didn't take that $5 billion hit, what would that $7.93 billion profit be? Would it be closer to 10,
question.
Right?
That's a great question because the Note 7 was so on par to do gangbusters. Yeah. It already had. It had such a good track up until fire started happening.
Yeah, literal fire. But you see Samsung, you know, makes TVs, they make computers, they make all this sort of stuff. So it's not just phones. And yes, they had a big hit with the Note 7 or miss with the Note 7, but they're doing fine.
Yep. Thank you, Brian. Always there with a little burn transition exactly when we needed it. Samsung apparently has dibs on most of Qualcomm's Snapdragon 835 mobile processors, which is keeping competitors from using the next big chip in their devices. Sources tell Forbes that the 835 won't be widely available until Samsung actually releases its next flagship, which is, of course, the Galaxy S8. That's expected sometime early Q2. Samsung did say during their Note 7 kind of debriefing of what happened with their batteries, that they wouldn't be at Mobile World Congress, but that they would be slightly delayed. So we don't know exactly when that's going to be. But what does this mean? This means that like companies like LG's next flagship, the LG G6, is going to still be running, according to sources, last year's Snapdragon 821. It also kind of explains why HTC's current flagship, the U Ultra, launched with an 821 instead of the next generation of mobile processors. Usually everybody kind of gets on the current generation bandwagon when it comes to Snapdragon's top-of-the-line processors. But right now, the 835 is being all snapped up from Samsung, who wants it all.
Well, I mean, it's supply and demand. I mean, yep. I guess if they, you know, if they worked out a deal, I mean, it kind of stinks. You know, I'm the kind of I don't like exclusive deals. I don't like single platform releases, all that sort of stuff. But this is, you know, I imagine Qualcomm is trying to, you know, appease all of their customers. But if Samsung put in that order before anybody else, then they win, you know.
Yep. And I should also say, just real quick before we kind of move on here, LG G6, The Verge says they have an image. This is the G6 Ooh. That is supposedly coming at Mobile World Congress. They say February 26th. You see the top half of it. So you see the rounded edges, the minimal bezels on the side. The top bezel looks pretty narrow too, but I wouldn't necessarily say bezel-less.
It's not, that is not bezel-less. There is still a bezel there, my friend. Yeah. So, I like LG saying that having the latest is more is less important than having a chip that they can, that's proven that they can test thoroughly. That's kind of like, I didn't want the latest chip anyway.
It totally is. But there's some sense to be made there as well, right? Like, it's tried, tested, and true, but it's a year old. So obviously it is. Coming up, we take the emoji serious. For a change, seriously for a change, or at least we try to. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They're the sponsor of this episode. If you've ever gone through the process, I know I have, of applying for a mortgage, of securing a mortgage, you know why you're doing it, and obviously you're happy that you have that ability, but it's just not, the process is never as smooth as it could be. It just, it takes a lot of, you know, coordinating all this information, gathering it, collecting it from all sorts of places. It's just not super smooth, right? We live in a digital age, so we want things to be easier when we're living in the digital age. And when it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, you also want to work with someone that you can trust, who has your best interest in mind, can make the process a little bit easier for you. With Rocket Mortgage, you're going to get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. You're not going to waste time searching through stacks of paperwork. With Rocket Mortgage, you can securely share your financial information to get a mortgage approval in minutes. And you can even kind of adjust the rate and the length of your loan on the fly in real time so you can make sure that you get the mortgage solution that's just right for you and your situation. Whether you're looking to buy a home or even if you're maybe thinking about refinancing your existing mortgage, you can actually lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage and their easy process. Skip the bank. Skip the waiting. Go completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. All right, everyone. It's time to get serious about emoji. Joining us to discuss a few stories in the emoji world is Jeremy Burge, founder of Emojipedia. He takes emoji serious. How's it going, Jeremy?
Hello. Very good. Good to be here.
It's great to have you here. You've written a lot about emoji, obviously, blog.emojipedia.com. We're going to talk about a few things that you've written up here and kind of peel it back a little bit, because I feel like sometimes when emoji comes up on these shows, you know, it's kind of a running joke, but it turns out lots of people use emoji, and there's very good reasons why. But before we kind of get into that stuff, let's start by chatting a bit about a few of the new additions. They're happening all the time, it really seems like, anyways. Tell us about the new emoji hiding beneath the surface of Microsoft's most recent Windows 10 Insider build.
So this is the latest release of what will presumably become the Creators Update, and that added emoji 5.0 support, which is the gendered emoji support, where you have the male version of female emojis and vice versa. And it's got the interracial couples, which is interesting for this one because Windows and Microsoft are the first to support this, which it's something that other platforms have trouble supporting because of the number of variations. But that's sort of buried below the surface. It's very hard to find these because they're not on the regular input for the keyboard.
How does a platform like Microsoft's Windows suddenly be... like, how is one platform able to launch something like this where other platforms aren't? I don't know. I guess in my mind, it feels like it would be more of a universal thing. Like, they all get it at once, but I see it's probably more on the platform level that something needs to be updated in order for this to happen. Why is that?
Right. Unicode adds an update every year where they'll approve a new list. What happens with the interracial couples, though, is these are a sequence of existing emojis and people can add them to their platforms whenever they want to. These mixed race couples aren't they're not out of spec with the standard, but they're not officially recommended, so that Microsoft can do this whenever they please. And if you send this to another platform that doesn't support them, you'll actually see the breakdown. You'll see the backwards compatibility. So you'd see a woman, a heart, and another woman, as opposed to on Windows, they'd show the combined glyph. So it's quite a clever technology they've built in there.
So is it the kind of thing where Unicode is kind of the basis, and then platforms are able to add, they can add to it, but they can't subtract from it, right?
Right. You've got a minimum level of support, and no one needs to support every Unicode character if they don't want to, but effectively the regular code points are the baseline, and then these sequences are sort of an additional thing that you can add if you want to.
And then when a company like Microsoft rolls out these kind of unified, like biracial couples is one example, whereas the other platforms are putting together the glyphs, you know, the piece plus piece plus piece together in order to simulate the same thing. In Microsoft's doing so, how then does that end up permeating into the other platforms, or does it? It's not always necessarily a lock that it will. It could be just a unique thing that Microsoft's platform has. Is that right?
I get the impression that other vendors might like to do this, but because they don't have vector fonts like Windows does, Windows can actually make, they have all the families set up where there's 52,000 combinations of family emojis because every person can have a different skin tone. And the other platforms, at least iOS and Android as they exist today, would really struggle to add that many glyphs to any font.
Yeah, for sure. Surprisingly, I would say, redheads don't have representation yet in the world of emoji. But apparently that's about to change too, right?
Maybe. It's the Unicode technical committee meeting this week, and redheads have been on the agenda for about 2 years now. They keep popping up, but the last proposal was put forward last year for custom hair tags, that every emoji could have its own different hair, but that was deemed a bit far for most vendors to be keen to support. So this week there's a discussion about maybe there should be a more limited redhead implementation put forward.
So wait, let's back up there. There's an emoji council that meets? Like how does that work? Like.
Yeah, it's surprising to people, but I'm on the Unicode Emoji subcommittee, and we meet every week, and that's over the phone. And then there's a quarterly meeting, which takes place in person. I'm not there this time around, but it takes place every quarter, where new emojis are approved, and all the vendors get together, and it's Google and Microsoft and Apple and Twitter and all the people involved. And yeah, they literally sit around and make decisions about what is going to happen.
And that's super cool.
The craziness about this is just the depth of differentiation there is in, you know, with human beings. Essentially, there are an unlimited amounts of combinations of things. Burke, who helps out here in the studio, says on his little paper, black hair with orange tips. I mean, at some point, that's a joke, but really, I mean, at some point, we're talking about opening this up so that everybody can customize, can be represented in whatever way they choose. It seems like such a complicated thing to tackle. But so I guess it would make perfect sense that there would be a committee figuring out which things rise to the top of the surface, right?
It's an impossible task, right?
Yeah.
You can't actually document everyone on the planet. So it's a matter of making pragmatic decisions about where you draw the lines. Naturally, redheads open the discussion about whether you should have other hair colors as well, or should you support baldness or gray hair on all the emojis. So every discussion involves around what precedent you're setting as well, so where that puts the standard in future. So it's an impossible challenge and just chipped away at one year at a time.
Sure.
Well, I would like to, as a member of the many thousands of people with sideburns, I would like to lobby for a sideburn emoji so that I can be represented in my text messages.
Could I say there's a beard emoji coming this year? So maybe if you fancy getting a bit more growth, you could be supported there.
Honestly, I'm really amazed that hasn't existed already. But
I don't live in Williamsburg, so I'm going to pass on the beard emoji. But
if we could differentiate to beard and the neck beard, that would be great too. So obviously, tons of variability between platforms. That's a big deal, a big challenge for unifying emoji across the board. Android users, as Ron and I both are very used to seeing little boxes, sometimes with X's in them, in place of where, you know, the emoji would be when it's sent from another platform. Why is Android particularly behind the curve? And I mean, maybe the better question here is Android the only platform that is kind of experiencing this type of subpar experience when it comes to emoji?
Android is alone in this for the most part. But obviously, as you know, and you've discussed about having OEM updates, and sometimes every vendor doesn't necessarily update to the latest version for all users. And that's really the issue, that emoji updates are tied to system updates because emoji fonts are built in at the system level. So if you don't get new updates for your Android release, you don't get the new emoji updates either.
Right.
And that's a problem, Jason, that as we just mentioned a couple of minutes ago, we are very familiar with in terms of doing the system update. But I've got to say, as somebody who's up to date on the Android platform, I welcome the new emoji, and I've gotten a lot of mileage out of that creepy clown. That creepy clown emoji is thumbs up, man. That was
pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. Yeah. And to be honest, Google is doing a good job with their emoji support. They're right on it. It's just when you get the updates. Google released their emoji support earlier than Apple did last year. So it's not that they're not doing their job. It's just on the other end that if you can't get it to the end users, I know when we looked at Emojipedia users, we were showing only 4% of Android users on 7.0 or above. Google says closer to 1%. And that's a huge issue. When the vast, vast majority of Android users are seeing empty boxes, then that's no good. How do you know what people are trying to say?
Subpar. It makes you feel like something's broken when you see that. And it also makes you feel like you're just not part of the conversation, which is absolutely true, right? Like, and that kind of leads into my next kind of topic, I suppose, is that it's easy to look at emoji, and I know I'm perfectly guilty of this, and think of emoji as like a toy or a game, or you know what I mean, like not take it seriously. But in the digital world that we live in, when we're typing as much as we do, emoji actually plays a pretty important role. So in that case, you know, it conveys an emotion. It conveys an emotion, a feeling, a characteristic that can sometimes be very challenging to put into words. So in that case, it really does feel like you're being left, you know, being left outside of a particular conversation. It's like suddenly, you know, you can't read French and suddenly half the conversation is in French and you'll never know what it said.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It is fun. People do like to make fun, and I understand it. It's a funny technology, and it's fun to have, but it's absolutely the best thing we have. We don't have anything else within the text standards to convey what emoji can. So while it's pretty amazing that we actually have this pretty diverse set of characters that work in any text field on any platform, and that does allow us to say way more than we could without them. So without that, I don't think people would actually genuinely prefer a world without them, even though some people tend to say, oh, wouldn't it be better to have no emojis at all? They're the worst. But in reality, they are convenient and they're quite helpful to have.
Hey, sometimes when you're especially, I mean, the limited text, you know, mainly with text messaging, you know, when you're limited to a small amount of characters, I'm somebody who wants to be succinct and to the point. Sometimes that's, you know, smiling face with the two hands gets across what I'm trying to say better than explaining the emotion I have right now. So it adds a visual component to our language, which I think is, you know, really changed the way we communicate.
There's a laziness aspect as well, which is brilliant. As you call it laziness, call it efficiency, but nonetheless, there is a great angle. And even some things are just really difficult to convey, like sympathy, but send through a love heart to somebody, a friend who's wants a bit of sympathy, and you get out of jail free card. That's amazing. You know, you've done a great job, and you've just sent it through.
If you really want to creep someone out, you send them this emoji, right, Brian? Yeah. Fascinating stuff. Emojipedia. So is it, it's blog.emojipedia.org. Is that right? Is that where people can kind of follow your work online in the world of emoji?
Yeah, that's got the latest emoji news, what's happening.
Awesome. Jeremy Burge of Emojipedia, really appreciate you coming on and talking emoji. We should have you back and check in on more of the kind of things that bubble up to the surface with emoji in the future. We appreciate it.
I'd love to. I'll check in next time.
All right. Take care and have a good night, Jeremy. Thank you. All right. We got some feedback. Radio Rod wrote in to discuss a little bit of internet history. I hadn't even thought about this in so long. He says, I used to operate an old school R&B streaming music station for over 11 years on Live 365. Remember Live 365, I'm sure, Ron. Yep. He says, they had to be the first to offer such a service as they were in business for over 17 years. Independent DJs could broadcast live, upload their music to Live 365 servers as they kept a record of what songs were streamed. They would then forward royalties to ASCAP, BMI, CSAC, and Sound Exchange from funds paid by broadcasters, sponsors, and VIP listener memberships. Then, with little notice, they went out of business in early 2016. Now, in January 2017, there is a website up using their name and logo claiming they're back. Almost all buttons point to coming soon or similar statements. I'm very skeptical that this is the real deal. Is Live 365 really coming back? So first of all, I remember Live 365. I wouldn't say that I was necessarily a regular user that I can remember of. Like, it wasn't a site that I relied on, but I remember the days of the independent music streaming DJ. You know, they were everywhere, and Live 365 was at the top of the heap as far as that was concerned.
Yeah, no, I absolutely remember that, and it's kind of fascinating to see that, you know, they were that's a brand that I absolutely remember as being in play, and then, you know, much like a lot of these services that emerged in the mid 2000s, as we got towards 2010 or so, they kind of faded out, and you just assume either they go away or go out of business. I didn't know what happened to Live 365, and it's a fascinating story. It's kind of cool to see that someone's trying to bring it back.
Right. So basically, yeah. Real quick before we talk about someone who's bringing it back, so basically what happened is there was an expiration of the Webcaster Settlement Act of 2009. That happened in December of 2015, which basically forced a transition from paying a percentage of revenue, which is how services like Live 365, small and medium-sized services like Live 365 could afford to operate. They were only paying a portion of the revenue, to paying per stream with a set amount per stream. And that basically shut companies like Live 365 out of business. It allowed the big players like Pandora and other services to continue and to thrive because they could weather that storm. So that happened. That pushed Live 365 out. When I looked into this, why it's back, sure enough, apparently a 23-year-old graduate from University of Pittsburgh did indeed acquire Live 365 through bankruptcy court. John Stevenson is his name. He says there were no solutions right now for small webcasters to broadcast like they did while still be compliant to licensing requirements. And so he's trying to bring it back. No employees at the moment, he says. He's relying on contractors to work to bring Live 365 back to market. I think this is kind of a wait and see. It seems like the website is obviously a signal that he's working on it. We'll see how far he gets it. You know, this is a challenging industry. It was challenging before, and now with current regulations, it's even more challenging. I mean, even the big players in this industry are having a really hard time making money doing this stuff.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I'm playing around the website now, and it looks like it's up and running, but when you dig deep, you realize that there's nothing there.
Yeah.
You know, like I go to listen to a radio station, it says coming soon, coming soon, coming soon.
Right.
But hey, I applaud him. 23-year-old kid who's got a vision, and he's right. You know, like audio, I actually tweeted the other day there was an article in Ad Age about how businesses these days need to have an audio strategy in terms of what they're doing, whether it's through radio or podcasts or streaming or whatever. And audio is, as we know it, Jason, you and I are both big believers in audio. So the more opportunities for independent people to be able to broadcast using these great tools, the internet that we have, the better. So I wish them luck.
Yeah. But thanks for bringing our attention to this, Radio Rod. It was good to hear from you, and it was good to kind of like remember Live 365. I had completely forgotten it. Apparently a lot of people had, but maybe coming soon, it'll be back. Coming up, voice activation trigger words are about to get a bit more trigger happy. But first, let's take a minute to thank Blue Apron. They're the sponsor of this episode. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone, all while supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest quality standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with fresh, high-quality ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. You do this all in the comfort of your own kitchen. They give you everything you need. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card, as well as pre-portioned ingredients that can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. So you're going to save time and money when you shop at the grocery store. It's actually 60% more expensive than what you get with Blue Apron. If you're eating out all the time or you're shopping at high-end grocery chains, you're spending a lot. You can actually now spend under $10 per person for healthy home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. Customize your recipes every week based on your dietary preferences and choose a delivery option that fits your needs. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. And Blue Apron actually delivers to 99% of the continental U.S. They're also setting the highest quality standards for their community of over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the U.S. Blue Apron not only supports a more sustainable food system, also supports happy and healthy families, getting families kind of cooking together, because that actually builds strong family bonds. Research shows the Blue Apron families cook nearly three times more often. They're given the tools, they're given the food, the recipe, all that kind of stuff, and they can just dive in and do it together. It's a great learning experience. New recipes are created every week with Blue Apron's culinary team. They're not repeated within a year, so you're not going to get bored of these dishes. Just a couple of examples from the menu. There's spicy shrimp and Korean rice cakes with cabbage and furikake. There's pork chops and garlic piccata with scallion rice and spinach. Mushroom and chipotle pepper enchiladas with lime sour cream. And finish it off with a little hoisin chicken steam buns with broccoli and marinated carrots. You can check out this week's menu for yourself and get the first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/TNT. That's blueapron.com/TNT. And we thank Blue Apron for their support of Tech News Today. TNT's fan of the day is Russell Heiling on Instagram, who says, "We can't all be on a private jet. Podcasts get me through the travel chaos." And Russell obviously is not very amused at all. He looks really cold there. Are those icicles on his beard?
I don't. It looks like, is he boarding outside? Like, that's an outside boarding is tough, man.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I feel you.
And it also looks like a very crowded. I mean, you can't be getting on a plane. Is that a train platform? Because are that many people waiting to get on a plane outside? Russell, where are you commuting to? And do you need help?
It's okay, Russell. It's okay. Just listen to another episode. It'll warm you up. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. You can post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we're going to find it. All right. Attention. Those of you who are sick of hearing the wake word for Google Home or Amazon Echo or Siri on podcasts because it makes your own devices wake up suddenly. We've heard from a lot of you, by the way. Your life is about to get a lot more annoying. Consider this. Amazon Echo has now added a new way to wake the device. A new option allows you to step into your Star Trek future, the one you've always dreamed of, by simply saying the word computer to wake the device up. And which is very cool. Don't get me wrong. I think that's awesome. I would love to wake up my device by saying computer and then issuing a command. But if you ever wanted us to stop saying the wake words in our discussions on this show to avoid waking your devices, I hate to break it to you, but we kind of have to say the word computer a lot on these shows. And we're probably not going to stop saying it. But there you go. What do you think?
But hey, as a Star Trek fan and as someone who was raised on Star Trek 4 with Scotty going back to 1987 San Francisco and picking up a mouse and going, computer, right? Also, as a Google Home owner, I'm very jealous of Amazon Echo owners now because I would dream one day to call a computer. The Star Trek talk interface to their computers was what we were raised on. And so very smart in whoever did this to try to give Amazon Echo the edge by having the ability to do this. And really, like, the wake word, I mean, people want to name that. That's what I think is so amazing about these in-home devices like the Amazon Echo and the Google Home is that people want to change the wake word because they want to name it, because they want to personalize it. They want to make it their own. And that, I think that's so cool. And I hope that Google adds this to Google Home and we see more wake words and it becomes, how do you express yourself through your wake word?
I have to imagine at some point this becomes a kind of a widespread thing where it's like, all right, you've asked, because I have to imagine this is at the top of request list. Like, allow me to choose my wake word. I don't want to have to do the three or four syllable thing you give us. I understand why they've chosen that, A, branding, and B, because it's a more or less a unique phrase, let's say. But people want to be able to wake it with whatever word they want.
Well, here's a question, Jason. As a Google Home owner, right, and you've used Amazon Echo and all this sort of stuff, but as a Google Home owner, if Google came to you and said, would you want to be able to customize your wake word or support multiple user accounts?
Oh, dang. That's multiple user accounts.
Yeah, it's more important. So more important.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy to see wake word because that's the fun thing and all this sort of stuff. But the recognizing voices and having multiple users access it at the same time, I think, is way more important.
Yeah, maybe the wake word is just your voice signature. But then it would just wake up every time you talked. I don't know. I don't know. But I would agree. That's the bigger issue. That's the bigger deal.
I'm positive they have very smart people working on both problems.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But I'm also positive that doesn't mean we'll see it anytime soon.
Yeah, true.
Who knows when we'll see it, in other words. Thanks, as always, to Ron Richards. Really appreciate you coming on and hanging out with me today. And we get to hang out in about another half an hour for All About Android. Yeah. So it doesn't end here. So thank you. Appreciate it.
I never let go, Jason. Just like Titanic.
What do you want people to know? Where can people follow what you're doing?
Yeah, you can follow me along all my musings over on Twitter. I'm at RonXO on Twitter, and that's where you can find me. And I tweet about my other podcasts. Please check them out if you're new to the show. If you've never heard me, go check out iFanboy. It's a podcast all about comic books. Comes out every Sunday. You can find that at iFanboy.com. And also me and Tom Merritt, our good shared friend, we do a great podcast called Damn Fine Podcast, which is at DamnFinePodcast.com. And it's revisiting Twin Peaks. And watching it in leading up to the new season coming this May. So check that out.
Fantastic. Please do check that out to make sure you're up to date before the new season happens. Thanks again, Ron. Talk to you in a few minutes.
I'll be there.
Tomorrow, the triumphant return of Megan Maroney. I will put the water bottle off the desk and onto the floor, because Megan will finally be here again, and I'm looking forward to that, to having her back. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, midnight UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail, of course, 260-TNT-SHOW, and find us on Twitter. We're at Tech News Today TV. We have an audience survey that's underway right now. It really only takes about 2 minutes to finish. It's basically to help us get an idea of who our audience is, who you are, hopefully to provide better programming for you, help us to pick advertisers that we think you'd actually like, that you'd be interested in. So many important things. We take privacy very seriously. We promise to protect that. We do not identify you in any way in the survey. So if you want to help us out, totally optional, but go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. We'd love to hear from you. Find all the ways to subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. If you want to tweet at me, I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to Brian Burnett, as always, for being our technical director. Thanks to Burke and Kara, because she helps out in the studio, too, from time to time, for helping out. And thanks to Kevin for editing. And thanks to you, finally, for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.
Bam.